Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, and the crazy ones for everybody. You didn't even have to be a conservative, so get ready for that. Jim, let's start with the good, and we really mean only good politically, because a lot of people's lives are a lot more stressful and a lot more uncertain when it comes to their health care as a result of Obamacare. The good news politically for the Republicans is that it should be a very lucrative issue for them this year, although it would probably help if their presidential nominee had the first clue what was going on with the health care system. But as you point out in the Morning Jolt on Friday, there's just a mess in the system. We had Bill Clinton earlier this week admitting in public that this thing's all crazy. You got people working 60 hours a week, getting fewer benefits and having their premiums doubled. You do it state by state. Hey, Delaware, you've got a 32.5% increase from Highmark Blue Cross Blue Shield of Delaware. Aetna's raising your rates 22.8%. In Iowa, residents in 13 rural counties will have just one provider to choose from for 2017 under the Affordable Care Act because everybody else is getting out. Tennessee, after losing nearly $500 million on its individual health plans offered through the Affordable Care Act over the past 3 years, Tennessee's biggest health insurer is scaling back its participation in the Obamacare program, even after regulators granted the company a record 62% rate hike for the next year. Oh, and by the way, they're completely getting out of Memphis, Nashville, and Knoxville, so no big deal there. At the UW-Madison, the school is cutting the work week of its student employees to no more than 29 hours, so they don't have to pay for them under the Affordable Care Act, a move some student workers say will make it harder for them to stay in school. Blue Cross Blue Shield of Nebraska saying it's no longer even going to participate in Nebraska with the exchanges, and it goes on and on and on. This week, we also had news of insurers trying to sue the government to get their promised subsidy payments. So, Jim, this is a complete mess. As you point out, the Democrats don't want to talk about it. The Republicans should, but it kind of helps if you know what you're talking about.
There were a couple of people who pointed to 2012 and said, one of the reasons the Republicans lost was that Mitt Romney was the wrong guy to prosecute the case against Obamacare because he had signed into law RomneyCare. It, too, included an individual mandate, and as a result of that, the Obama kept saying, well, look, this is based on your idea. I'm not sure how much that really was the decisive factor in Romney's loss. Yeah, it might have been better if it had been somebody who had a completely clean record in terms of opposing the individual mandate. But there are things that are wrong with Obamacare beyond the individual mandate. The whole thing is structurally built wrong. The whole thing was sold to the American public with a pack of lies. No, people aren't getting $2,500 back or spending $2,500 less than they would like Obama promised back in 2008. No, they couldn't keep their plan. No, they couldn't keep their doctor. The whole thing basically, somebody made the interesting point that the only election that had any impact on Obamacare was 2008. Ultimately, the 2010 midterms did not stop the enactment of it and the passage of it and the implementation of it. 2012, I suppose if Romney had been elected, yes, it would have done that. But 2014, again, the law continues to go forward, despite the fact that it's never been popular, despite the fact that it's never been a majority of Americans liking it, and despite the fact that ultimately, if it had been sold honestly, it would not have passed. As the infamous third Gruber brother said, this was, they're able to do this because of the stupidity of the American people. You would think this would be a really ripe fruit to be plucked by the Republican nominee. And you certainly saw Mike Pence bring it up in the vice presidential debate. Donald Trump made a lot of mistakes in that first debate, and one of them was not – health care was not mentioned at all. Think about that, Greg. This has been the bread and butter of Democratic politics for like a generation. Right. We're the ones who are going to take care of you and your family. We're going to make sure you get the health care you need. We're going to, take the fight to those mean, nasty insurance companies. Health care. All of a sudden, Democrats don't want to talk about health care. I think it's a pretty glaring reason why. Obamacare stinks. The Affordable Care Act has not made it more affordable. People are dealing with higher premiums. They're dealing with higher copays. They're dealing with higher deductibles. The whole thing is not affordable. And people are really upset about that. And we have a golden opportunity here to really take it to the Democrats for, you know, that we can say this is liberalism at its most purest and clearest form. They don't want to tell you what they really want to do. They want to take more from you than they're ever willing to say. They will promise you the moon, and they will tell you you're going to save a lot of money when you're not. They don't really care about whether you get the care you want. They only care that you click on the, whether they can check the box and say that you're insured. They don't care if you get to keep your doctor. They will tell you whatever they have to tell you to get you to sign on board, and then they stop caring about you. This is a great message, and Donald Trump didn't mention it at all in that first debate. So we'll see what happens Sunday night. If he doesn't mention it Sunday night, it's hard to believe he will have a really good debate without this. And I think that pointed to his lack of preparation before the last one, and I certainly hope he prepares for this one, because if he doesn't, it's just, that's a great pitch right down the middle that he won't swing at.
Right, and this is the town hall format. We don't know exactly what the questions will be, clearly. So even if he doesn't get an Obamacare question, as you have pointed out, Jim, since the first debate, you go there anyway. You got to make the pivot, and we'll see if he can do that. Mike Pence did it very, very well. He didn't talk a lot about Obamacare, but he pivoted well consistently on Tuesday night. We'll see if
mentioned it a couple of times. He had like a couple, a paragraph here, a paragraph there.
Right, exactly. So, all right, well, you mentioned Obamacare is not popular. Unfortunately, as we turn to our bad martini, the same cannot be said about its namesake. This is courtesy of CNN. President Barack Obama's approval rating stands at 55% in a new CNN ORC poll, the highest mark of his second term and matching his best at any time since his first year in office. There are partisan differences. He's not moved at all among Republicans. He's up 12 points among Democrats to 89% approval and 14 among independents to 56% approval. Jim, let me ask you to respond to this paragraph. The new poll continues a streak in which Obama's approval rating has been at 50% or higher in CNN polls since February, a seven-month run that is his longest since 2009. Jim, what started happening in February?
Valentine's Day? it became increasingly clear that Donald Trump was likely to be the Republican nominee, and even though there was a little bit of ebb and flow in the Democratic primary, it was pretty clear that Hillary Clinton was going to be the Democratic nominee. Oh, did I just say two Democratic nominees? Sorry for that Freudian slip. Trump would be the Republican nominee. That these were the options before America. And that probably makes some Americans less resolutely opposed to Obama as you and I feel kind of fond about him. But Obama has a lot of flaws. There's a certain school of thought that says that when a political figure is not in people's face all the time, telling them how much the voters have disappointed them, how much you, America, you've let me down, they feel a little more fondly of them. And as much as you and I might find Obama insufferable, he's generally not as crude as Trump is. Generally, Obama's lies are not quite as transparent as Hillary's are. And I think the grim prospects of the presidential contenders probably have Americans feeling more fondly about Obama. I think you and I would say that's not really that's a little convenient memory lapses there, and they're forgetting all the reasons they were irritated with Obama. We have new jobs numbers out today, and there's meh as anything we've gotten lately. But I think that there's something to be said for the fact that Obama, for all of his infuriating flaws, generally tends to carry himself with a certain amount of dignity. Certainly having the White House helps. So he looks, when you address the country in the Rose Garden, there's a certain decorum, there's a certain tone. And I think maybe that's, it's that respect for the office is helping Obama's approval ratings in these last couple of months. And I think it's a little bit of an indictment on Hillary and Trump and just kind of the way they make Americans feel.
Both nominees are so bad that a president with Barack Obama's record is seeing some of his highest approval numbers of his presidency. And it's not just a reflection on Trump and Hillary. That's probably why these numbers are getting better, Jim. But it also impacts other races on the ballot, because if people go to the polls having a relatively positive opinion of Barack Obama, that's not going to bode well for Republicans running for Senate and running for House. I did a little bit of research here on this. These are Gallup numbers, not CNN numbers, so there might be a little bit of a discrepancy, but the point still holds. On Election Day 2010, when Republicans obviously had a very, very good day, Barack Obama had a 43% approval rating, 49% disapproval rating. On Election Day 2012, when he was reelected, 50% approval, 44% disapproval. In 2014, 41% approval, 53% disapproval. That was a very good night for Republicans also. And as of their latest numbers, 54% approval, 43% disapproval. That's not the numbers you want a month away from Election Day.
It isn't. And look, I think that their stage was set for Republicans this year, that it's very hard to hold the White House for more than two consecutive terms. The only person who's done it since FDR was Reagan and Bush from 1980 to 1992. So, yeah, I think the economy's not doing great. Certainly the world is on fire, or there are constant crises. Times Square blew up, or Chelsea, there was a bombing. Look, you know, people feel great anxiety about the state of the country. This is a scenario in which the out party of the Republican Party should be able to thrive and should be able to win big. And, well, we're not really doing that, at least not yet. But I guess that's, you know, we still have a month out and we'll see how it shakes out, Greg.
Yeah, a lot of time. So anyway, one of the big impacts, a lot of people think, on the 2012 campaign was Superstorm Sandy coming just a number of days before Election Day. And, of course, Obama taking the tour of the devastated areas, partly with Chris Christie and so forth. We're not going to rehash that. But a lot of people thought Hurricane Matthew could have the same impact, and we'll see exactly what the impact of it is. It appears to have moved a little bit further off the coast, at least in terms of the eye, so hopefully the damage is not what some people were fearing, and we'll certainly be praying that people stay safe as the weekend unfolds here. So, Jim, one of the things we've been hearing from Rick Scott in Florida, Nikki Haley in South Carolina, I'm sure the Georgia officials as well, although I haven't personally seen it, is, look, if you're in the areas where this massive storm is coming, you need to be prepared. And if you can, get out of there and get to a place where the storm is likely to have less of an impact. Giving out that message, not a problem. You want your people to stay safe. That's the number one job of local, state, and federal officials. So there's a calm way to say it, which is pretty close to what I just said. And then there's the Shepard Smith on Fox News way of saying it.
See this? Melbourne, Daytona Beach, all the way up to Jacksonville. This moves 20 miles to the west, and you and everyone you know are dead. All of you. Because you can't survive it. It's not possible unless you're very, very lucky. And your kids die, too.
Well, thanks, Shep. Thanks for not ratcheting up the hysteria. Wasn't he the one who was telling us last year, just calm down about Ebola? All you people are getting hysterical. And now he's out there guaranteeing that tens of millions of people are going to die.
Yeah, your children will die is not something you usually hear in your typical newscast. I suppose there could be a certain sense of frustration on the part of lawmakers and those who cover hurricanes and National Weather Service, because we've had a lot of near misses lately. We've had a lot of cases where people have said, look, batten down the hatches, be ready, and the storm turns out to be not that bad. Or the various times we've had humongous blizzards. Some of this is natural media hype. Some of this is also just the inclination of people in authority. Post-Katrina, where Katrina turned into this giant political problem. It was a situation where, like, you know, the failure of preparations on the part of the city and the state suddenly turned into a presidential issue. Suddenly, all of a sudden, you know, hurricane responses run out of the Oval Office. That no politician wants to ever be accused of taking something lightly or not dealing with it as seriously as they should have. So as a result of that, you now get people extraordinarily focused. And sounding the alarm. And maybe this is a worthwhile use of caution. Maybe it's starting to turn into the boy who cried wolf. But anyway, you want to shake it. Your children will die. Shep Smith doesn't. You know, sometimes he tells you the news, and sometimes he just emotes the news at you. And that certainly seemed to be it today. You know, here's the thing, Floridians, if God forbid, you know, the hurricane hits as bad as everyone says and you lose your life, Shep Smith told you so. Fair, balanced, and unafraid. No, who are we kidding? They're terrified.
That's right. Absolutely terrified. We are definitely serious about the folks there staying safe, but that's just irresponsible to go out there and just be utterly hysterical about it. But it's not the first time, as you point out. Jim, have a good weekend. I don't know if you're going to choose football or the debate on Sunday. I guess since we get paid to watch the debate, we'll probably watch that. But we're really looking forward to it, as the listeners can tell.
Who's the Sunday night game?
Packers-Giants.
Ooh, good game. boy, it's good, you know, we didn't need to win Wisconsin or anything. Trump will have a terrific night and nobody will watch because everybody's watching the Packers. Oh, well.
Exactly. Talk to you Tuesday, actually.
See you Tuesday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Have a great and safe weekend, everyone. There actually will be a 3-martini lunch on Monday. Please join us then.